It is time to start the 411. Let's do this. My name's Chris.
I'm Marcus.
I'm Michelle.
The goofiest thing we've ever done.
And I'm Eddie.
I'm Diana.
And that's everybody. So I think today we are going to talk about HyperDox. So HyperDox, what do you think?
I'm going to have to play Switzerland for a little while here on this one. I don't get it. I really don't. I don't know a whole lot about them. I don't understand the purpose of them. I know Diana's really big into HyperDox, so maybe she can talk about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm Switzerland, but I'm undecided. I'm not neutral. I can see benefits and some pretty legitimate downfalls. I'm just not sold yet, so somebody's going to have to convince me.
Well, I think HyperDox are a great solution if you don't have an LMS. So I've never understood doing the HyperDox in conjunction with an LMS. It's a place you can already design digital content. But if you don't have that, if you're working with Classroom, it's not a bad idea as a starting point, like how to organize digital content, specifically instructional content, not just assessments, to give to your students. I think the problem is that it's so trendy that people do it without having, like, we talk about HyperDox without having real purpose behind doing it, and I think that's the biggest issue.
So here's the thing, like, here's my HyperDox handbook. I am, like, a self-proclaimed HyperDox fan, and at the most basic level, we kind of skipped over, but a HyperDox is an interactive Google Doc, and if that's, like, where your conversation about digital design stops, of course it's not going to be successful over time, but if you are coming from a place where blended learning and digital lesson design is sort of a new thing, HyperDox can be a really good jumping off point because you're using a platform that teachers are really comfortable with. And then you slowly take the opportunity to talk about tons of other things.
So I guess it's great for districts and corporations that maybe are just kind of dipping their toes in to the digital learning market, I guess. I don't know, like, I understand what you're saying, Diana. Like, that makes sense, right? So teachers are familiar with, you know, putting together documents, and it would be really simple for them to just create links and make tables and make that document interactive. So I get it. I like it, especially for districts that are just starting in this type of thing.
P.S. This is why Diana's here. We started a podcast without describing what it is we were talking about.
So Diana brought something up that I think is, it's definitely a conversation that we've had before, and I'm not trying to take us off topic of HyperDox, but we'll definitely need to revisit this discussion of HyperDox as a transition tool, if you will, because I may be a little bit neutral on HyperDox, but I'm definitely not neutral on transition, in technology. So I'm going to put a pin in that.
And this is where I think we get stuck. So, like, when you hear the word HyperDox, you think it's a Google Doc with links on it. And that's definitely not what it is. And I'll say, like, most of the HyperDox that I've seen made lately aren't even docs at all. So, like, if you focus, I guess what I'm really saying is, like, if you focus on the product of putting together a document, then you're totally missing the mark here. Like, HyperDox, you have to think of it more of like a process concept. And then it really starts to click, and you talk about ISTE standards and the 4Cs and SAMR, and you don't even really get to the tool conversation until the very end of that process. So I think the mistake is not doing HyperDox wrong, but the mistake is thinking of it as a product.
That's a really interesting way to put it, and I don't think I thought about it in that way, because I'm in the camp of, like, I don't like HyperDox as Google Docs for e-learning design purposes. I think we overwhelm students when we have a bunch of content all on one page. Cognitive load says we can only process about 3 things at any given time, and so when we have content all in one spot like that, we're almost guaranteeing that students can't take it all in. And so for that reason, I've always preferred HyperDocs in slides to chunk up the information. I think it's easy enough to navigate and without overloading students. But I think you're onto something. Like, I like the way that you are framing that.
And Michelle, you know, we've been talking about this thing for a couple of weeks now, and one thing that you said a while ago that really stuck with me is that putting everything in one place just for the sake of putting it in one place isn't really a good goal. So doing it in a way that makes sense and thinking more about the platform and not just relying on a doc to do it, that's definitely like one of the number one things I've heard students say. Like, this doc is huge, I can't find anything in it, and it's just like I'm totally like confused about what I'm supposed to do.
So real talk, I have not done anything with HyperDocs as not a Google Doc. So I'm guilty of ignorance when it comes to HyperDocs within slides. I mean, I know it's a thing, I've not done it myself. But my first instinct with HyperDocs, the first time I saw somebody talk about it, was honestly like a phrase that my mom used to say all the time. And I'll edit it, but my mom used to say, you can't polish a turd. And to me, when I saw HyperDocs, I thought to myself, that's a worksheet that's been polished and made to look like something else. So I've had a hard time shaking that instinct. But maybe if I looked at it in slides, that might change things for me a little bit. So I'm listening.
So my thing with HyperDocs, I'm going to talk about one of the things I actually really like about HyperDocs is, and I know this hasn't been brought up and it probably will, but if we're going to talk about a HyperDoc versus like a WebQuest, a HyperDoc is a little bit more intentional. A lot of the templates that are out there, and there's a lot of great people and sites that have created wonderful templates, but they will have the basically the steps of the lesson design process in them, and so it allows for the teacher to be really really intentional with how they've designed the lesson, and it's put together in a way that's supported by best practices. And so, I mean, I think that's really strong for HyperDocs.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Chris. So the HyperDoc girls would call those learning cycles, and when you start to explore creating HyperDocs, you can see all of the different ones that are available, and then using instructional design best practices, you could always modify those to fit what you're looking for anyway. And Marcus, like your comment, I think takes me back to like my earlier argument, is that, yeah, like, if we interpret them as a glorified worksheet, then that's all they're going to be. But we can say the same thing about every single technology tool out there. If we're just using it as a substitute, then, you know, that's on us. It's not on the tool.
So with those learning cycles, the only thing, though, then that I would argue is, you know, the lesson design in an actual lesson isn't as linear as, like, hook. And then, you know, onto instruction, and you know, you do. But anyways, so I guess what I'm getting at though is, you know, your instruction may be somewhere in the middle, right, as opposed to right after the hook. And I think with such strict parameters, yes, a teacher can edit it, but they're more likely to just design a lesson within those parameters, and what you end up with is a bunch of canned lessons that all look the same if the teacher isn't sort of taking some creativity. So that, I would say, is the negative side to how I talked about the, you know, there's lesson design best practices there. You got to be careful that you're not giving the same experience to kids every day, because obviously it becomes the new normal and then it loses effectiveness. It becomes old.
Well, and I think that it all comes back down to teaching the process. And I think that's where we fall short. If we're really honest with ourselves, most trainings or professional learning that I've seen around HyperDocs, it's been very template-driven, how to create this hyperlink document, which that's not groundbreaking in any sort of way. But I think if we talk about how you can use it to create personalized learning opportunities so that it's not necessarily linear, that you have students that are connecting with each other and giving them choice. I think that's possible, but I think we have to change the way that we're training on HyperDocs and maybe even ditch the language. Sometimes I think vocabulary becomes so popular that it becomes synonymous with bad practice. And that's why maybe I've never felt super excited about HyperDocs. But I also think that means that, you know, we are all in some capacity responsible for professional development around these types of ideas. And I think that means we need to shift our focus to how do you design online experiences for students? This is not something that any of us who are probably trained for how to do in college, we're not seeing a lot of professional development on it in our schools, but then we're expecting this design to happen for students, and then we're shocked when it isn't as high quality as what we expect face-to-face instruction to be. And it's because we're not providing enough dedicated time to teach each other how to design in an online space.
Yeah, I'll completely agree with you there. I sort of like wish that we could call it something else because when it's done well, it really becomes something else beyond just the HyperDoc. And I'm not saying it's perfect, but my approach to this is not to train in a big group like with it really at all. I think one-on-one with teachers when it comes to this is the best because you have to differentiate within that PD. So like some teachers might want to talk about elements of blended learning and doing some flipped classrooms or something, and another teacher might really only be ready to talk about curating digital content. And I think with this, if we do the big group, the training versus the coaching, that's probably like a huge part of why maybe we've seen so many HyperDocs that haven't been much more than the glorified worksheet.
All right, so we need to accomplish two things then. I need to see what you guys, and maybe this is in a future podcast, I need to see like what you would deem a good HyperDoc in a Google slide, because I don't even know what that looks like. I'm interested, I'm intrigued, I'm hooked, but I don't even know what that looks like. So I need to see that in the future, and I think we need to go ahead and pull a Bill Shakespeare here and and coin a term. We need to right here today, or maybe not today, but we need to coin a term for what the new HyperDoc is going to be and get rid of the stigma.
Mega Doc. No, that's not it. Sorry, I'm listening. I'm not super enthused about HyperDocs, but I'm listening. I am just like Marcus in this conversation. I'm listening. And I think there are some things that might be a little easier to transition with in my district with some teachers to show them, you know, what a HyperDoc could do for them. Let's come up with a better name. I like that idea.
I mean, I think a better name sort of already exists. Digital lesson design, online design. Michelle would probably be a better one to speak to this.
And I want to be clear too, like, though I don't have a really hard stance one way or the other on HyperDocs, I have sort of toyed around. I think everybody that is an educator who hears the new thing wants to tinker and wants to experiment and play. I mean, I've made a HyperDoc as a sort of a living resource for teachers for e-learning, and I felt like that was effective. I mean, it's something that they can go back to. I've got tutorials built in and other resources and so on. But again, I'm not treating the HyperDoc as a lesson. It is more just providing a centrally located, easy to access resource for teachers. So by the definitions that Diana and Michelle have given, you know, I'm kind of just superficially using that tool. And so I guess what I would be interested in doing is finding out what good use of a HyperDoc would actually look like, because I feel like my use is pretty superficial.
So, I mean, I think we've established that HyperDocs, when deployed effectively, are a really good thing. So, would any of you guys like to share some places where, if there were teachers that were wanting to learn more or get more access to HyperDocs and maybe some of the templates that we've talked about, where would be a good place to start?
So, I heard about HyperDocs, you know, a few years ago like everybody else, and I didn't think much of them. And then finally, I think it was last summer, I went to a summer of e-learning session by Trisha Hall, fellow EdTech hero. And I think her Twitter is at Trisha Jones Hall. And that was the first time where I sat in a session and I was like, I have to do this. And she had sold the tool well, and her presentation was just chocked full of like years and years and years worth of content. And my instinct was, wow, that's awesome. But I haven't gone back to it, and I need to, because I feel like at the time I was really impressed by the content and the amount of help that session and that presentation had available, but I haven't gone back to it. So maybe I need to do that. But I know that she really enjoys them, and she's done some sessions on it.
Look, I'm going to try it. I am definitely willing to try it. Not as quick as I just got done trying these Thin Mints. I don't know how quick that happens, but it's gone.
You know, I'll plug the HyperDoc handbook again. I have this ready to show you, because it really does talk about all the things that I have been trying to focus on in this conversation. It talks about student data and privacy. It talks about choosing the right tools. It talks about the ISTE standards and the 4 C's and all the things that we try to honor when building good online lessons. So I think it's definitely worth a read. It's a quick read, but the conversation just definitely cannot stop just there. It's a good way to get started, though.
He's a good one to talk to as well.
So someone that I would recommend from our, she was actually in my Google, Diana and Eddie and I's Google Innovator cohort, and that is Jen Giffen at Virtual GIF, or go to www.virtualgif.com. She is really, really good at HyperDocs, so check her out. And assuming there are people on YouTube watching this, comment below some great resources so that people watching can find those. That would be completely awesome. So the 411 is not all about education. We like to talk about fun stuff too. And Eddie, man, tell me a little bit more about that cookie.
I don't know if any of you guys have a box of s'mores available, but I'm about to attempt to microwave them. So how long did... Yeah, it's cookie time. How long did you say I should microwave them for?
15 seconds. You are welcome.
All right, so I've had those, but I have not microwaved them. They are amazing. Here's my issue with not only Girl Scout cookies, but food in general. Serving sizes. Ugh, are you kidding me? They seem to think that like 4, 5, 6 cookies is a serving size. What? I guarantee Eddie just polished off an entire sleeve of Thin Mints. Like with no problem. So we gotta work on these serving sizes.
Thin Mints come in 2 servings per box. 1 sleeve a serving.
That's not true, Michelle. They're about 8 servings per container. I had help. I did have help. The Thin Mints are probably the best cookie. Can we all get on board with that? They're a crisp wafer covered in chocolatey coating made with natural oil of peppermint. They're delicious.
Lies. Samoas are where it's at.
Yeah. Peppermint, like, as a young child, like, oh, you're gonna get candy. you would choose peppermint, like that would be the candy, not chocolate, not peanut butter, peppermint.
Eddie, he's like kind of this weird Benjamin Button thing. When he was a kid, he was actually an 80-year-old woman. So I don't have any good Girl Scout cookies left because I ate those. But I do have some of these guys. I don't know if you guys are familiar. These are the Toffee-tastic gluten-free cookies. They are a rich, buttery cookie with sweet, crunchy toffee bits. They are absolute garbage. Garbage. That's why they're still here, and they're going to be here forever. If you want them, come and get them.
All right, so I microwaved my s'more for 15 seconds. You can see it's like really oozy, not the filling. It's really oozy. So I'm about to dig into this.
I don't trust you. I think you should give it to one of your kids that ran in the background. That's the true test.
Yeah, did everybody hear that? Diana's like, hey, cookie. She barely even got through the word cookie. And her kids are like, cookie time! Woo!
All right, sis, what do you think about the s'mores cookie?
I like it.
You like it?
Yeah.
I think it tastes sort of, not like real s'mores. It tastes sort of fake.
Please tell me you have a Thin Mint that you could give her so we could get her reaction and it can prove my point.
Are you guys ready for this? I am going to give you some knowledge. Take your box, Girl Scout cookies, Samoa's best box, and on the bottom, it tells you the bakery. What you may or may not know is that there are actually two bakeries that make Girl Scout cookies across the country, and a lot of states get like either one bakery or the other. And in Indiana, depending on where you are in the state, you get access to one of the two bakeries, and the bakeries make different cookies, y'all. Okay, so here I have Little Brownie Bakers, and so I get Samoa's. If you were in a different part of the state or in another state, you might get it from the ABC Bakery and their Caramel Delights. And they actually, the cookies are different. Like Samoa's have 20 more calories than the Caramel Delights, and I'm a little embarrassed that I know that. But like the s'mores, so what you just saw that Diana had is actually chocolate covered if it comes from the other bakery. Like tagalongs are called something else. I don't remember, peanut butter patties or something, depending on what bakery you get it from. And I feel like there's a lot of contention around like which bakery is better, which one has better cookies, and I am in desperate need. Like, seriously, YouTube, if you're watching, anyone, and if you have cookies from the ABC Bakery, like, I need, just for research purposes, I need to know. I need to have some.
We don't have any boxes. There are some Girl Scout cookie. I've got some, like, weird contraption. So, that's interesting. But I don't have the box. But I do have this cool contraption.
So, like, I've heard of this thing, right? So my wife, who is from southern Indiana, Evansville, Vincennes area, claims that the Thin Mints are different here in the Indianapolis area, that they're kind of ridged, and they have, like, it's very weird. I don't believe her. I've never seen those Girl Scout cookies. They're also wrapped differently. So, like, as we have the clear wrapping, she claims that the Thin Mints down south have, like, a tinfoil wrapping. It sounds made up.
Now, that just blew my mind. Like, so there's like an East Coast, West Coast Girl Scout cookie bakery thing going on, and I didn't even know it. I'm intrigued.
She's totally right. Like, one of the Thin Mints has more peppermint for all of those kids out there that love peppermint. But one has more peppermint than the other, less chocolate, it's shaped a little different. I'm telling you, this is real. Google it.
Can somebody please tell me why we are segmenting an entire audience here by just thrashing Thin Mints? Like, they're the worst cookie that Girl Scouts put out because they enjoy a little peppermint in their cookie. I mean, have you tried these things frozen? Have you tried them with ice cream? Have you tried two sleeves in an hour?
Okay, Eddie, calm down. I love Thin Mints, but I will say my favorite are the Dosey Doughs. although I just gave my son a do-si-do to try, and he took a bite, put it down, and said, give me the rectangle ones. That was a s'more, so s'mores seem to be big with the kids.
Guys, I'm going to have a whole box of Samoas gone by the end of this recording. Just for research purposes, obviously.
All right, so I told you guys that I had the Toffee-tastics, which I have eaten and didn't like. But I bought the trefoils because I felt like they were the classic. Like, I don't even think I've ever had a trefoil. But I thought that that must be like the go-to. It says traditional shortbread. You can't possibly screw this up. You can't mess this up, right? So I'm going to try it. I got one sleeve. Clear. I'm going to try one right here and just see. I'll give you the 411 on the trefoils. Michelle, is there an equivalent? This is Little Brownie Bakers. Is there a ABC Bakery trefoil? I don't know. I'm going to take a bite and I'll get back to you.
It's shortbread. Like, as a child, we're like, Mom, can we have shortbread for dessert?
No, let's talk about the gross ones, okay? Michelle, was it you that told me the Savannah Smiles are going, like, this is the last year? I love lemon stuff, like lemon meringue pie, I love it. And I figured that that would be sort of like what this would taste like. These are nasty. And this is what our box of s'mores looks like, just for my children in the last couple minutes.
I did hear that. I don't know if it's secret information, but I heard Savannah Smiles are going away. I kind of like them. Like, I like the lemon.
All right, this is trefoil number 3. Yeah, I mean, it's shortbread. I will say it's crispy. It's buttery. Those are two good things. I do feel like, again, kind of like with the Thin Mints, I just don't feel like I'm old enough to be eating just a straight up plain shortbread cookie. They're just all right for me.
He's three cookies in. He goes, hey guys, I'm gonna try this trefoil. And the next thing you know, he's like, third cookie.
Marcus, are you a coffee person? Because if you take those shortbread, dip it in some coffee, that's really good.
Diana hears the effects of giving your kids a bunch of cookies in the background.
And that's the real 411.
So one of the things we're doing this podcast on the app Marco Polo, and one of the features that we found is the fast forward feature is a lot of fun. There's also some voices and stuff.
So I can sound pretty macho. But anyways, let's try out the fast forward feature and let's play a little game and remix some songs. What do you say?
I don't trust it. Not at all.
We might as well. We're here. We got some time to fill. But, yeah, big shout out to Marco Polo. Like, they completely blew it out of the water and said, we'd love for you guys to use the app as your platform. So we're really excited about that. And we can do this, you know, on our off time, which is available virtually for us to do this vodcast. So really exciting. Thank you, Marco Polo. That's our plug for the big bad Marco Polo corporate office.
Marco!
I don't think you guys are ready for this songbird right here.
Chris, it's your game, so we'll let you take over. I can't believe I just said that.
When I say Marco, somebody says Polo. I thought that was a very obvious thing to do. Let's go, guys. Come on.
Can I still do it now? Polo! Polo!
As it's starting to set in with me, I think I just gave full, like, access to let Chris do whatever he wants. Big mistake.
All right, so here's how the game is going to work. I have I don't know if you can see it over there, but I've got an Amazon Alexa over there, and you're going to throw a song at me, and then I'm just going to belt it out, and we're going to have to record it with the fast forward feature to get that remix, and then I get to pick somebody and my song, my choice. So, someone, what you got?
So many options. TLC, Waterfalls.
Good one. One moment, I'll be right back. That's better. All right, here we go. Remix.
Chasing waterfalls, please stick to the rivers and the lakes that you used to. I know that you're gonna have it your way for nothing at all, but I think you're moving too fast.
Come on, Marcus. Endless love. Do it.
My love, there's only you in my life, the only thing that's right.
My first love, you're every breath that I take, you're every step I make.
I want to share all my love with you, no one else will do.
All right, I don't think anybody can follow that, but somebody's got to. So, Diana, you're up. I gotta think of a song, though. Got it. Diana, throw down on some Tay-Tay. Taylor Swift, pick a song, any song, it's all you. Go.
All right, one sec. And I gotta add a filter.
I hit you like bang. You try to forget it, believe it couldn't end. I very hatchet, spite it, not so well. Put in reputation, perceive me.
Crazy.
I swear I don't love the drama. It loves me, and I can't let you go. Your handprints in my soul. It's like your eyes and liquor. It's like your body and soul. You've been calling my bluff on all my usual tricks. So get some truth from my red lips.
So as Diana calls somebody out, man, if the 411 doesn't work, let's form a band.
All right, Eddie, your turn. Third Eye Blind.
Ooh, what's he gonna come with? I'm gonna guess Semi-Charmed Life.
The rap part of Semi-Charmed Life would be sweet on Fast Forward.
Pretty sure Eddie's like in the kitchen steeping some tea and honey. Get those chords ready.
Wish you would stack the necklace, my friend. You could cut ties of all the lies that you've been living in. And if you do not want to see me again, I would understand.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo! Yeah, get it!
There's one person we've been avoiding in all this. Michelle's got to give the people what they want. A hot Spice Girl song.
I vote Spice Up Your Life.
No, we have to go with the classic Wannabe. This is like middle school. It was everything. All right, let me find it. I'll be right back.
We want the deep cuts. Come on.
Deep tracks only.
this is going to be really bad. I feel like if I put a filter on it, maybe it'll make me sound better. You guys ready?
I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. So tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. So tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I wanna really, really, really wanna say, if you want my future, forget my past. If you wanna get with me, better make it fast. Now don't go wasting my precious time. Get your act together, we could be just fine.
Woo-hoo. Now here's a story from A to Z. You wanna get with me, you better listen carefully.
Sorry, I don't know what came over me. I get a little excited. It's my karaoke jam. So, hey, great job. I think we just end it right there. We just end it right there. It's a great 411 vodcast.
And that's the 411.